these Web 2 brands need to have Web 3 people that understand Web 3, and it not just from a marketing standpoint, but just from the psychological standpoint. Because right now, if a Web 2 brand comes in, they think that people are buying an NFT because they're buying the product. No, people in Web 3 are buying it because they're gamblers, because they're speculators. Now, that's how the market is currently right now, and I think will be for the next sort of 3, 4, 5 years, because the people that are crypto natives are degenerates and they're gamblers in the first place. Where I think it gets interesting is when you take the speculative nature of products in the Web 2 space and turn them over to Web 3.
Welcome to Oz NFTs, NFTs are for Everyone podcast.
Every week, we'll bring you Australian artists, collectors, and builders that are paving the way in the Web3 space.
We'll go deep into their stories, how they're reshaping digital culture, and how you can get involved.
NFT Nate.
How you going?
Good, mate. Good, good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Just the market is what it is. It's a little bit hard, but it's a good hard because there's opportunities when everyone's scared and everyone's running away. Everything contracts, which is really good because a lot of people are like, oh, it's bad losing money. But I have not been invited to more private groups now than I have before because everyone's contracting. The way I like to think about it is high school, 7, 8, 9, 10, everyone was kind of in their own little circles. Then you got 11 and 12. Everyone kind of would like, you know what? We're fine. We're good. We were in different groups, but we're fine. We're all trying to achieve this one goal. Yeah. So everyone's starting to condense down, contract, come back through.
Yeah.
So it's like that right now, which means that what's going to happen when it kicks back off, you're going to be super connected. So literally on the way, like today, got put into a group and then all the people that you think are going to be like sort of top tier, like real good builders are just in this group. And there's some just like hot alpha flying around already. So that's what's happening. But if it's full crazy bullish, everything's running, everything's hot, everyone's making money, why would you need to be in that group? Because everyone's got their own pockets where they're making money. But now everyone's contracting, all the people are gone, which means you know who's staying here. So that's why it's a good time to be in the space.
What an amazing opening quote. Look at him, on fire already. Thanks for coming out to HQ in Dulwich Hill. Amazing to have you. Pete's not here today, guys. After our big run in Melbourne, he's caught a little bit of a sore throat. It's just me and Nate going today. Thanks so much for coming down. Been loving following you, obviously, and seeing what's going on and seeing your persistence through the bear market, which obviously you just explained is why wouldn't you be doing it, right?
Exactly.
That's a lot of the feedback that we're getting as well. You know, we're chatting to a lot of people through spaces and going out and just chatting. And lots of mixed reviews. Some people are saying, why would I get in at such a crazy time? It doesn't make sense. There's no money in it. I'll wait until, you know, everything goes up again. Doesn't make much sense to me personally. But yeah, just trying to sort of gauge what's going on in the space and seeing how it's going. I want to back up real quick though.
Go for it.
And just touch on who you are and what you love to do, just for those listeners and watchers that might not know yet.
So I got into the space 2021. In February or March when VV kicked off. So like they had all the Batman, all that kind of stuff. You could go in there, you could buy stuff. You didn't need to wait for a drop. You could just buy stuff. I'm like, okay, this is all right. Then I got sick of waking up at 1 a.m., 2 a.m. for those drops and just kind of like dropped off that. Then I started to see on Reddit those posts like JPEG Rock said it sold for $1 million and then this ape sold for this. I'm like, what the hell? And I looked into it and I'm like, this is dumb. But then it clicked and I'm like, that's exactly what crypto in 2013, 2014 was. Everyone thought it was dumb. Everyone's like, but I've got a bank account. Why do I need digital money? Now everyone's like, but why do I need a picture? I can just screenshot. I'm like, oh no, this is early. And at that point, I'm like, this is worth paying attention to and taking seriously. Now my background is in content and media. So I just like making videos. I like doing that. So the natural progression was if I make a YouTube channel, first off, I'll hold myself accountable. I'm not going to, if I make a mistake and you make a mistake in the public arena, you're not going to make that mistake again. Whereas if you don't post your wins and losses publicly, then you can hide them, which means you're going to make the mistake again. Everyone's done really good in the bull market. Everyone's done really good, but everyone's lost a shitload of money, but no one wants to say that. Whereas the people that are out front and center going, hey, I moved into this project. Hey, I've done this. People can go, oh, you suck. You lost some money. I'm like, bro, yeah, maybe I've lost some money, but I'm not going to make that mistake again. You're going to keep making mistakes over and over. The other aspect was if I then become somewhat of a media personality, if Ethereum dies tomorrow and moves to Solana, I'll do it. If everything dies off and moves to another chain, I can do it because I'm not tied to one specific chain, one specific thing. I'm an ETH maxi, but I can then pivot and move because there's always going to be news. There's always going to be things to talk about. So that was my thought process going, how can I end up learning faster, learning better, and then also withstand what this current market is right now by putting myself in a position where I can end up just like put my face on a screen and talking and then build up an audience there. And what's crazy is that if you actually look at what was happening when I first started doing YouTube, there was no way to really monetize what you were doing. Like there was no whitelist alpha. There were no giveaway. Like the whole ecosystem we kind of knew in January, February didn't exist. So the idea is you're literally making content going, I don't know how I'm going to be able to make some money off this later, but you were just doing it. And then eventually opportunities found their way and it was great.
Interesting. So you've obviously been in crypto since what, 2013, 2014 or?
That's when I've known about it. Like obviously people are like, oh, so you ride in like a $2 million bag. It's like, no, because it ran up to $1,000. Then it went down. You're like, I guess it's not going to run it up again. Run up to 17. You're like, no, it's not going to run up again. And it just every single time it's like, okay, let's just dollar cost average, buy a bit more in. Nice. And the whole point is like, I'm not a millionaire. But the idea is like, okay, cool. You dollar cost average and you kind of got some stuff. Like I was buying Ethereum at $300 a coin. It ran up. People were like, well, why aren't you kind of balling out? Because at $300, when it got back up to 1200, you were like, hey, I made an easy 3-4x. You start taking some major, you take some profits. The people that sort of YOLO it and hold onto it, they're like big and huge. They're millionaires, all that kind of stuff. But really smart people, you go and like, if you make some money, you take the money and you put it into other things. Yeah. One thing that I'm a huge sort of advocate of is take your money out of like, I actively take my money out of crypto. And we were kind of chatting before we jumped in here, buying property because like you need a house to live in. Like you just need that. And the whole idea is if property prices aren't going to be dropping by 90%, if they drop by 3%, people are like, oh no, this is crazy. This is terrible. And it's like, once you've got some property, the bank will then give you money, which means you can then do more with it. It's just crazy. So it's funny because you'll be talking to some people that are in the space that are a little bit younger and they're like, yeah, but I have like net worth of $1 million in coins. Now it's down to like 90 grand. It's like, if you just took that million, cash it out, pay your taxes, now you got 500 grand, buy a property, now you can then essentially borrow the cash you put into that property anyway because it's like you've got equity there. And you start to kind of, it's funny because I would be scared if I got into this space now as a youngin' because you would think that the money comes easy, it comes fast, and you'd never want to work hard again. But I know what it's like to work a job and you're just like terrible. So when some money comes through, you're like, cool, I'm scooping that off the table. Big wins. Like legit, any big win I get, that shit hits my fiat, not stablecoin, fiat bank account. Like win MetaMask straight to the exchange bank into the fiat. Because the way that my friend who's got an accounting degree, the way he said it, he goes, you've just made a 30 grand flip. And he goes, if I gave you 30 grand right now, would you buy all Ethereum? I'm like, fuck no, I wouldn't. Maybe buy 10 grand. He goes, cool, now cash out 20. I'm like, oh shit, don't think about the wins as you've won Ethereum. Think about it as a fiat win. Then how much would you put back in?
Yeah.
And like that's how you can kind of actually lock some stuff away. And that's how you also don't get wrecked when it comes to tax time.
I mean, it's really good advice, right? And it's kind of different to what you hear from a lot of the people in the space, especially it's like, oh, you know, I'm decentralized, so I'm not going to get a bank loan. Why do I need a bank loan? It's like, well, for me, I think everything's a balance, whether it's, you know, what blockchain is going to dominate in the future or, you know, should we be reliant on the tax system or should we be reliant on banks? And so I think it's a really good approach that you've taken. I think it's very sensible. And I think that it's something that people should be educated on because a lot of what's out there isn't telling people that, you know, a lot of the other YouTube channels that are out there can sometimes be a little bit alarming what they're telling people to do. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey into YouTube? So you obviously saw there was an opportunity. You'd done this work before, is that right?
So I've made content before. So I've done corporate videos, I've done music videos, like I've done content stuff before. And I've got a friend who's got a YouTube channel, not in like crypto or anything like that. He's got 350K subs. And everyone's like, oh man, I'd love to like create a YouTube channel. It seems like free money, easy money. And he said to me, he goes, Nate, you're the only person that could actually pull this off because you actually know what it's like to shoot something, to edit, make the thumbnails, do that. And he goes, just make it and do it and you'll be fine. So I've always had his perspective when I'd be like, hey, I'm not getting many views. He'd be like, change this thing, do this thing. Because you've got alpha groups in the NFT space, but you've also got these alpha groups when it comes down to YouTube channels. Like he's in a group with like the hydraulic press guy that has millions, like he's got millions of subs and he just hydraulic presses stuff. So they know exactly what's happening. He's the kind of guy that he can put it out and he goes, oh, I only got 100,000 views. I should have had 120. My thumbnail's off. I need to change it.
And so they're sharing this information within the group.
Yeah. And when a new algorithm, an update comes, they're kind of working on that. And right. That makes sense for guys that are in the hundreds of Ks of subs because they're doing that. They're also getting, he's also getting big deals from brands and things like that. So he knows where it can go and how it can work. So it was easy to have someone going like, look, just stick to it, do this. Oh, actually, you know what? Pivot this way. Then he would also kind of speak to his agent and be like, hey, look, my friend's got a channel. How does this work? What could he do? Then that agent would be like, okay, well, if you actually have a look at the channels that are succeeding, here maybe the takeaways, maybe pivot here, do that. Because it's not just make some content, put it up. It is constantly learning. If you go back over my channel, thumbnails have eventually changed, titles have changed, the styles of content have changed. Everything's just evolving and constantly moving.
I noticed that last time, well, the first time we spoke actually, it was probably a month or two ago now. And you had said, yeah, look, go look through my thumbnails have been changing. And I had a look and yeah, it actually encouraged me to change my thumbnails too. It's a crazy process. And I mean, I want to dive into this a little more because I know for us, it's something that we're really starting to develop our strategy with, which is, you know, doing long form and short form content and getting it out there. I've have personally experience with Instagram, but like YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, especially things like this, it's all pretty new for us as well. Yeah. You know, we started all this when we started our business like 7-8 months ago. So we're still learning. We're still very open. Yeah. I mean, what are some tips that you can give? What are, say, two tips to a newbie getting onto YouTube that wants to start to generate a little bit of a following?
I think it can't, like, you need to be somewhat self-aware in what you can do. A lot of people will be like, I'm going to upload a piece of content a day. And then when they don't, they're going to punish themselves. I've been going through kind of like I've been doing some stuff outside of the space, like we're chatting off camera. And the idea is I usually upload sort of 4 videos a week. I've only done 2 videos in the last 2 weeks. Do I hate myself for it? Nope. Don't care. Don't give a shit because it's like, it's fine. I'm thinking about it like from the longevity aspect. Mm. So if you don't, everyone says you should try to be consistent, try to do this, try to do this. But if you try to be consistent, but it doesn't work for you, you're going to burn out. If you try to make a specific type of content, but it isn't congruent with you, you're going to burn out. Like, you need to be self-aware with how you operate, how you work, and then that's what will work. And eventually you will then start to form your own kind of, you'll have your own mold, which will then make it easier. When I started making content, I discovered Nansen and I was like, oh, there's some really cool, interesting charts and details here. And like, I can't, like, some of my boys, some of my YouTube friends, they can find the hottest projects super early. Like, they are just like absolute guns. They're really good at this. I'm all right at it, but I'm not as good as them. So I'm like, well, how can I compete with these guys who are just really good at that? I need to kind of take something that I like doing, I like looking at, what I find interesting, and then put that forward. So if I was a new person coming into the space, be self-aware. It's like, cool, do you like just talking? Like, do you not care about the actual kind of the marketplace and just the overarching relationships of people? Talk about that. Do you just scroll on OpenSea all day and just go, hey, this is popping off? Talk about that. Whatever you know, whatever you like to look at, or if you find yourself gravitating towards, that's what it should be. And I know some guys are literally geared the Twitter algorithm to just show them new NFT projects. They've just done that and done that, which means that these kids, and I find it funny, they should have a TikTok account, which is like, here are the 5 projects I found today. Bam, 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 bam. Here, YouTube video. Here's the 10 projects this week that I found out. Because one of them is going to be the Mechaverse, the Hate Beast, the Invisible Friends, the Utes, before they became what they were. And people are like, wow, that person was early on something. Now you've got a whole bunch of people following you, thinking that you're the Messiah, that you can see everything. But you've just been throwing so much shit at the wall and something's stuck. And then people go, wow, you must be really good. And eventually you'll start to see those patterns and you'll get better and better.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, the whole YouTube journey is an interesting one. I think the point that you make of, you know, find and think what is good for you. I mean, I guess it's with any content creation, right? Find what interests you. Because when it gets down to it and you're grinding, and you're doing this every day or every 3 days, whatever you've decided, you're going to want to love it.
Yeah.
And you're going to want to be able to have the ability to dive in and learn about this stuff so that you can then push it on. And I think the point that you're making is it doesn't matter what you're interested in. As long as you find what it is, you can always provide content to someone else and provide value, to someone else that will be able to take something from that.
Mm. One thing that I'd like to touch on as well, and this is like, it's crazy, is that if you do what you want to do. Some people will just like you because they just like you. They don't care what you're saying. Like, they're just going to find you a cool person. There are some people that I watch that I don't care what they've got to say. I just want to hear them talk because they're just a funny person. And it's not even just NFT people, just a gamer that's like playing Skate 3. I like this dude. There's other people that are better than him. There's other people that I just like that dude. He's just fun to watch. And eventually you're going to become that spot of entertainment in their life that also can provide them value. And what's crazy is that, and this is just the maturity speaking, when there was the Russia-Ukraine thing happened, all of the YouTubers stopped putting up content because like, oh, we want to be respectful. But I'm like, this is the wrong time because everyone's watching the news, watching the bad stuff. What do they want to do? They want escapism. They want to see that friendly face talking about not the thing that everyone's talking about.
Absolutely.
So when you start to think about that, you're going, how can you make something, even if it's just like, hey, I went to the shops today. I saw this. Imagine chicken salt NFTs. It'd be great. People are just going to be like, they don't care about what you're saying. They care about you. And then that's when you actually build the audience and that's when you can actually do some big, crazy things.
It's cool what you mentioned about people watching people because of who they are and them being themselves. So I was talking to some friends about this over the weekend and it was like, you know, what makes someone cool? You know, we used to go through school and be like, oh, what's cool? What's cool?
Yeah.
And I finally think that, you know, now we're hitting 30 and we're starting to realize that it's literally just embracing who you are as a person, that's right? It's just having that self-awareness and then being able to like confidently explore that and sort of go, okay, this is who I am. This is actually what I'm like. And sometimes it actually takes withdrawing from your circles to be able to bring down that barrier and not have that barrier constantly there. Because sometimes it's there and you actually don't even realize anymore, right? So withdrawing, understanding who you are as a person and then embracing and then pushing that out. Mm. And, you know, you see people when they go viral, they're being their true selves.
Yeah.
And that's what people connect to because it's what they want to do as well.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really fun. It's interesting. Let's dial back. Yep. I want to talk about NFTs.
Yep.
And so you are working in media and you've got your own, are you running a business at this point or?
Are you talking about, so within the NFT space, the way that I like to think about like my business within the NFT space is I've got my sort of YouTube channel, TikTok, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. But what my business is, and it's actually kind of funny, is that I have an alpha group. Now, for those of you that don't know what an alpha group is, it's essentially a group where you've got someone like me and I'll know some other people as well that'll go out, kind of speak to projects, secure some whitelist spots, get some good information for them so that the person that kind of is in their sort of 30s, 40s that wants to be in the space but doesn't want to grind, doesn't want to sit through it, can just log on once a day, once every couple of days and be like, cool, what whitelist spots can I get? What's the information? What should I be moving into? What should I move out of? The idea is that you're almost doing the research for them, not financial advice to your own research. And then you're able to kind of deliver that to them on a platter. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea is that these people are paying to be in it, but you also need to think that if you can then provide someone $500 worth of flips and value, but they're only paying $200 a month, they're getting $300 worth of additional value out of nothing. So the idea, that's essentially my business. So what I do all day is I'm speaking to projects, speaking to founders, speaking to collab managers, finding out what's happening. Like right now, it's like, this is going to be dated by the time sort of this gets out. But at the moment, everyone's talking, like in every single server that I'm in, everyone's talking about Tripsters. There's a project that came out sort of months back called Tripsters. They're getting some VC funding or something. So something is happening. So after we get off this, I'm going to be jumping into my server and be like, hey guys, here's the word that's going around. Here's the play that it could be. Here's what to be careful of. So that's what I kind of do. And in a bull market, it's essentially people are making free money. It's just easy money for them. And it's also like you're almost just offloading all of that responsibility to someone to kind of do the work. Mm. And then you can just like filter that out. And where this gets good, and like some of my guys that are the just guns that are the best at what they do, they've got an entire network set up of collab managers, of people, of everything that happens. So when someone's got a project, someone will be like, hey, this person that was involved with this one is doing this project. They get in early before they have 1,000 followers, speak to them and be like, okay, cool, I'm going to secure whitelist spots for my group. Okay, what's the utility? What's going to happen? Sit on it. 2 months later, it pops off. People are like, how was that guy on so early? Because once you know someone, people add you to another server, add you to another server, add you to another server. And then that's how it works. So you got to think the knowledge that you have is valuable to people that want to pay to just get it without having to do the research. So that's my business. And it's funny because I actually hate the whitelist meta the way it is. I know that it's like goes against what the business model is, but it's like that's just the way that things have kind of fallen into place. But I hate the whitelist meta the way that it currently is, because it's going against what, and I'll describe, the whitelist meta is at the moment, projects used to have they used to go to mint, and everyone that wanted to mint would just pay exorbitant amounts of gas and just get the project. So the idea is the mint could be 0.09, but you need to spend 0.25 on gas. So it'd be 0.33 just to even get into it. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is the people that were OGs, fans of the project, wouldn't be able to get into the project because it'd sell out in 2 or 3 minutes. Then what happened is projects have then gone, okay, how about we create a whitelist? So the people that are OGs that have been there from day one, let's give them a 24-hour period to mint before we let everyone else do it. Then what happened is projects caught on. We're like, oh, this is a really good way to then market our project. So it turned from rewarding those original holders into a marketing tool.
Right.
So now what I mean by whitelist meta is the idea that projects are doing giveaways on Twitter. They're doing giveaways everywhere to market their project, to then give those spots, not to the people that actually want to be in the project, but to people that have won it on Twitter and to alpha groups.
Through engaging exactly, and building the brand.
Exactly. So it's like, in a bull market, it's a way to print money, because if everything's doing a 3X, you can just run it through. And without kind of like dive into it too deep, the idea is it's like, hey guys, I've secured 30 spots for this project. The mints are 0.05 or 0.09 and it'll run up to 1 ETH. And they're literally just making money. They're just like, okay, cool. Nate said I should jump in the project. And I'll go, cool. I think it'll hit a 0.5 to a 0.6. So set your sell orders at a 0.45. They move in, mint at a 0.09, set a sell order at 0.45, go to sleep, wake up, easy money in the bank. What mint's happening next? Go again. And then what happened is it works when there's a lot of money in the space and people moving around, but then everyone caught on, which then kind of shifted it. So that's my business model, and that's a big kind of run through how it kind of works and how it operates, but I absolutely hate it. Mm. And I know that a lot of other guys that are in that same situation hate it because it's not running the project how it should, it's not running projects how they should actually be run, and giving holders that actually want it, like to get into the project, giving them access to it. And there are mechanics that are kind of starting to develop, but yeah, so that's the current sort of state of the market and how I fit into that piece of the puzzle.
Okay, cool. I love that. And I want to sort of diverge from that. So, I mean, talking about whitelists or allow lists and all these, you know, different mechanics that go on there. Mm. I see a longevity issue with that, being that a lot of projects aren't going to have, as you said, their sort of original OG fans in the projects. They're going to be priced out.
Yeah.
And then you're also getting a lot of speculators come in, which then, you know, what it does, it then basically it pumps and then they'll leave. And then you've got this project sitting there that's sort of been battered and bruised and may find it hard to get back up again.
Exactly.
Where do you see the space going? So, I mean, we've obviously gone through this crazy bull run where, you know, as you said, it was free money.
Yep.
Amazing for those people that were able to take advantage of that. Yep. We're obviously now in a bear market where we're seeing a lot less projects come to market. We are still seeing a lot of projects coming out. If you want to jump in and give some sort of insight into that, that'd be cool. But I want to ask you about longevity in the space. So where do you see projects going long-term? Do you still see for this foreseeable future projects like what we've been seeing coming up, where they are essentially more or less pump and dumps, or are you seeing more?
The way that I kind of see everything overall is that 99% of these are just not going to work. They're just going to fail. They're not going to do any good because the people that are in those projects originally, like you got to think the OGs and original supporters, it's gone back to those OGs and original supporters understand that they, if they're in on a project early, then they've got a chance to stack that whitelist. So you can't even go off the people that do actually want to be in a project. The reason I say 99% of them just going to kind of to die off and not achieve anything is they're essentially a startup that's raising funds, and they're a bunch of people that don't actually have a good use or a good business case. Any projects or any people that are launching something that have a good use case, that have a good business plan, they kind of realize that, hey, maybe if you execute on that before you even go to launch, you then can raise even more money. And this is why we're starting to see a lot of VC funding get into some projects and then use that as a way to kind of run out. But ultimately, I think a lot of just nothing's going to really succeed. And it's like, it might sound bad. It's like, well, why are you in the space? Because 99% aren't going to win. But if you did have some of those blue chips, even sort of a little bit ago, at mint price, you're still doing quite good. Like there are a lot of projects that are above mint that are still doing well. Like everyone shat on Hapebeast, but it's like that's still sitting a good 4x above the mint price. So the minters haven't lost any money on that, but people go, oh, it was up at 8 ETH. Now it's down at sort of like a 0.8 or a 0.5. And it's like, yeah, but that's still actually above the mint price. Everyone's kind of going off the dizzying highs about where it is and thinking that everything's failed. But ultimately, a lot of these projects just are going to come out and not do good. Where I think it will start to move is, and I've spoken to some people about this, that actually have a product and like going into different mint structures. So one of them is a pledge mint. So the idea that a project goes, mint the project whenever you want, which then means that when they get to the public sale day, if you've pledged your kind of ETH, you're then able to get that project. Because right now, if I was like, Josh, here are five projects that you got whitelisted for, are you going to mint them all? No, you're going to see how much money you can make. What if I was like, you can only get them if you spend the money now? Mm. You're not going to do anything. When I have these conversations with people, they go, there'd be nothing I'd do. Maybe meme land. And I'm like, there you go. So that's the only one project that you have so much conviction on. Mm-hmm. You'd spend money beforehand. If you remove the speculation of the all or nothing one day of a mint, then you're going to change the dynamics of the holders, because the only people moving in aren't speculators. And if they're not speculators, those are the people that are going to hold a big ass floor, which means that you'll then end up getting these big pumps and big rises anyway. So I see different drop structures and the way that people move into projects change, because right now it's broken because everyone is moving so fast and trying to just one-up each other, but they're only trying to one-up each other if it's a guaranteed win. So I see most projects sort of dying off, not doing well because they're following old existing drop structures and they're not sort of moving ahead and doing some new interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And without it being like a plug to some of my boys, Crypto Gorilla on YouTube, he's just a straight gun. He advised for a project called Bad Influence. They were running this up and I'd spoken to the team like months beforehand. I'm like, oh, I kind of see where they're going and get it. He came on as an advisor and I'm not sure if he was the pivotal piece in it, but they ended up doing like the day before going, guess what? All these OG people, they get a free mint. Then it was like, okay, the free mint holders held it up at a stupidly high floor price because they were just supporters from day one. They're like, okay, we'll be fine. They then sold out the project at 0.1. In a market I thought they were never going to sell out, but they sold out at 0.1 and it's now sitting at a 2x. Now with a project that he's also advising on, they're doing a tiered mint structure. So they've got six different tiers. Tier one, 600. Tier six is 1200. So now you go, do you mint tier one? And if you hold through to tier six, you instantly make a double of your money. But if you're in a tier six, you can then see if they actually execute. So then you know if you're going to do it. So it starts to gamify the system. Now the speculators have to like be fighting against each other before they even put their cash down about what they're going to do, because it comes back to a big, big sort of game of speculation. So I think that where it starts to move is some smart people going, how can you game the system and game the gamer and then just keep playing that? Like this is where I see it going, because all the projects will kind of run through what has worked in the past, but the real kind of innovators are kind of changing up the game now. And then that's when you'll kind of see the projects come out and do some stuff. Like even though Doodles did the bucket auction, and I love the idea of a bucket auction. Too bad that they kind of went silent on Twitter, and that's another story. But then Gangster All-Star also did a bucket auction, and the bucket auctions are a great sort of idea. And a bucket auction, for those that don't understand, you can go, how much do you want to spend? And what it does essentially is it goes, just say you want to spend 0.25. You go, oh, okay, I'll put a bid in at 0.25. It then gets all of the bidders through, then ranks them, and then goes, okay, like I'm not sure exactly how it works, but the idea is it then goes, it averages out and goes, cool, it's going to cost you 0.2. So then you get a 0.05 refund. But if you then said that you wanted, if you're going to put in one ETH, you then get five of them. But if you only put in a 0.25, you then get one with a refund. So the idea is everyone pays the same price after everyone goes in. And because it's a 24-hour auction, everyone kind of starts going through, it starts to gain the system. And you're going, okay, cool, where's the floor? Where's the floor? And the floor keeps rising. You can keep topping it up. And it gets fun, it gets interesting because you're gaming the system. People aren't going, cool, I've got a whitelist, because at the moment, a whitelist allow list is, I'm going to sit here to make sure that I can make some money before I go into it. Whole idea is you need to put that money down first. When you start to think about it, you don't go to the casino, go to the roulette table, ball spins around, lands in red, you go, cool, I'll put my money on red now. You put your money down before it even goes. And that's how it is. So what was happening is you're in a situation where people were able to see the results before putting their money down, which then meant that it just went crazy. And the flip side of this, and this is what will happen, no doubt 100%, because this happened coming out the back of October, November into the January. What's going to happen? Everyone that's been through the bear market, what's going to happen? You'll mint something for 0.1. It'll run up to 0.2. You'll be like, heck yeah, I made a 2x and you'll sell. But the new people that come in think that everything 5x's and it runs up to a 0.3 or 0.4. And you go, shit, I didn't make as much as I can. Next time you hold on for a 3x. Next time you hold on for a 4x. Then what happens over 10 different mints, you start to get cocky. And then that's how it runs out. Because all of the mints right now could run up to a 10 ETH floor. But what happens? People are content with taking a 0.01 or 0.02 profit because they're like, that's all I want to take. That's fine.
Because the people that are still in it have experience.
Exactly. Well, they've had experience, but they've experienced kind of making some losses. So they're like, let's just make mini win. If everyone that moved into a project's like, we're going to sell for 2x, that's all we're going to do. What's going to happen? Everyone's going to get a 2x because then people sit on the side and going, oh, I thought that was only going to be a 0.01, but that actually went up half an ETH. Okay, let's move into it. That's how you get something like Digi Daigaku that ran up to sort of 16 ETH. That's how you had a bunch of these smaller supply projects get some huge run up because someone buys, or same with like Goblin Town, someone buys at 1 ETH, sells it at 2, goes, yeah, I'm a genius, runs to 4 and like, oh, damn. They're buying at 4, they go to 6, they flip and they go, made another 2 ETH, runs to 7, like, fuck. Gets to 8, no, I'm going to get in it. That, because people gamble and they keep running in over and over. So that's what will happen when we turn around. All the veterans in the space aren't going to make as much as the new guys, which will then just spur it on because then all those new guys bring in all their friends going, check it how easy it is. You just spend $100 and you can make $500 because all the veterans here are just happy, content, taking their $50 win when there's $1,000 wins on the table. Because I know the same thing happened to me. January happened. I was super conservative. Me and all my friends, super conservative. And we just kept watching floors run. I'm like, maybe we should just let some of these run a little bit. But you still wouldn't let it run high enough. You'd just still be exiting early.
Interesting. Interesting. So these are all what you've been talking about is Web3 originated projects, yes, right? That have started, yep, and their first iteration is an NFT project. Yep. What are your thoughts on Web2 moving to Web3? You've obviously got some big brands that have been moving in. Some have been doing better than others. And what do you see longer term? Do you see more brands coming in and actually bringing the space value?
I think so. And I think where it gets, these Web2 brands need to have Web3 people that understand Web3. And it not just from a marketing standpoint, but just from the psychological standpoint. Because right now, if a Web2 brand comes in, they think that people are buying an NFT because they're buying the product. No, people in Web3 are buying it because they're gamblers, because they're speculators. Now, that's how the market is currently right now, and I think will be for the next sort of 3, 4, 5 years, because the people that are crypto natives are degenerates and they're gamblers in the first place. Mm-hmm. Where I think it gets interesting is when you take the speculative nature of products in the Web2 space and turn them over to Web3. One thing that I've spoken to a friend about, he was like, because he was drinking some wine, he's like, oh, Penfold should do an NFT where you could kind of buy the bottle and then that'll get you like a tasting and this. I'm like, bro, you think about this all wrong. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, if Penfolds came out with some Grange and they go, Penfolds sells a Grange NFT, you can burn that NFT. Well, it just changes the metadata. You still got it. You change that NFT, you burn it, you get that bottle of Grange, which now means the NFT that is the Grange, the metadata changes. Now it's an empty bottle. Now what happens is I don't drink wine, but damn right, I'm buying a 2 grand bottle of Grange. Do you know why? Because now it's going to be 3 grand later. Now I am a wine collector in a super liquid market of something that is really illiquid, which is that physical thing. Think about something like a Rolex. You would like Rolexes are quite liquid in the watch market, but if Rolex issued 10,000 Submariner kind of NFTs and you could burn that and you get like straight from that store, you could burn that NFT, still keep the NFT, but you burn it, the metadata, and you get that watch, you can guarantee that all these people that don't give a shit about watches would start to speculate on watches. So if you start to think about what people buy now that has value that they can speculate on, that you can then transition into a real thing, that's when it gets crazy. Because right then and there, why did, like, look, when we were sort of teenagers, you'd drink your bottle of whatever and you keep that bottle. Why does people keep it up there? Because they want to show that they've done it. You can now, when I start to think about this, you've got 50-year-old Barry. That's like, guess what? I've had every bottle of Grange, like the Grange from like 2006. Oh, no, you haven't. Check on my wallet. Oh, and you minted them. So it means you got them from Penfolds. Yeah, you do. And because you bought that Grange, now you're whitelisted for the next bottle of Grange. Now you've built up a community that's willing to buy stuff, and it doesn't need to be buying it with ETH. You can on-ramp with Feet. You can do all these kinds of things. But now you're taking a real-life product that a person that is a fan can speculate, can sell, it can trade and exchange, but you're still able to get that thing. Easiest thing was be like, I've seen it before on Twitter with people like, they would love to have like a Yeezy pass. Yeezy right now could sell a pass for $10,000 and be like, guaranteed you're going to get every single Yeezy drop. You still got to pay for it, but every single Yeezy drop, that's essentially like the whitelist first access for it. That pass would go for hundreds of thousands of dollars because having that pass guarantees you every single Yeezy. Then you start going, okay, well maybe every single Yeezy is an NFT, which means you can then burn it to then redeem that. Everything starts to turn into, how do you kind of foster that community and how can you buy it and speculate? I think when you get to something like Kohl's or Target buying sort of like a chair and getting an NFT, I don't think that works in this current standpoint. I think longer term, 10, 20 years, it makes sense where every receipt is an NFT. But right now, anything that has value that isn't a commodity, I think can be turned into an NFT. But you got to think, what would it right now, CEO of Penfolds, if you're listening, give me a call. What they would do right now is they'd be like, we're going to release a wine NFT. That's it. And it's like, you're not thinking about it. If you built a marketplace where you can buy, trade wine, burn it to then get that, change the metadata so the bottle's drank, people will then not flex the fact that they've got unopened bottles. It's going to be more of a flex to be like, guess what? I've burnt, so I've drank all of these bottles of Grange. I actually own all of these Rolexes. I actually own all of these things. And the thing is, Penfolds, they sell that $2,000 bottle of Grange. What's going to happen when it's traded? Making a 10% royalty, 10% royalty. They're making more money off it.
Every time.
But the people, they thinking the NFT as a product and they're not thinking about it as what their product actually is. And people are buying it because it is speculative in that nature. Why do people have a big ass wine cellar? Because they want to be like, I've got that 2006 Dom Perignon because that's a hard one to get. That's what I've got. Because you want to show off to someone, that's what you want to have. That's what you want to do. So that's how I see it. But it comes down to the people that are in Web2 understanding what their product is to people that don't understand what the product is.
Completely understand where you're coming from. You're saying Web2 companies need to create an NFT project that will appeal to Web3 investors.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
We're taking the other approach where, call it smart or dumb, we're trying to convert Web2 people into Web3 investors, and we're trying to onboard them in a safe, secure way so they understand how the market works. And we're trying to encourage more longer-term investment for brands that you sort of care about and want to be a part of that community. Yeah. And participate in. Same points that you're making though, you know, bring value. And I think there's a whole other leg of influencer marketing that can open up just from, you know, what NFTs does NFT Nate hold? Oh, I'm going to check. Oh, wow. He's got a Reebok NFT. Oh, and he's actually bought three of those. Oh, wow. I'm going to go suss that, you know, very simple mechanics, but it all makes sense completely. We're very cognizant of the language that we're using when speaking to Web2 people, obviously, when trying to get them into Web3. We're actually going out this Friday to do a Powapathon where we're going to be giving out Tezos to people on the street and giving them free art, which is going to be very interesting, very entertaining. But we're constantly trying to think about what words we're using. And a simple way that I've been asking people, and I ask all my guests, is how would you explain NFTs to your grandma?
I'd say it's a digital collectible. I feel like once you say that, people go, it's a collectible, but it's digital. That makes sense. When people hear NFT, they don't know what it is. They think it's a scam. They think it's bad. But as soon as it's called a digital collectible, everyone knows what a collectible is, but it's a digital version. They don't think they can screenshot it because you collect them. You can't screenshot a collection. So I feel like that is the simplest way.
There's also fake Pokemon cards as well.
Yep.
You know, and people can relate to that because we've all been stung.
Exactly. So I think that, and the joke that I make is like, I need to change my name to Digital Collectible Nate because it just make it easier. But it's like, if you have a look at one thing that's happened at the moment is Reddit. Reddit's got their avatars. They're called digital collectible avatars. They're not called NFT avatars. All the people that are on the cryptocurrency subreddits were just shitting on NFTs, hated NFTs until they got a free NFT. Then they realized, well, hey, this is all right. This is cool. I've got this PFP that no one else has. I've got my little hexagon thing. Oh, this looks all right. Instantly starts to convert some people into like, oh, this is bad. And because they got these essentially airdropped to them, they're like, oh, this is good. And it's like, this is what we've been saying all along. Just participate in the space and opportunities will come, which means you will end up in a better, like, you just end up in a better spot later on because you understand how it works, how it kind of goes. But the key word is they've been using the word digital, like digital collectibles, which then makes people go, it's collectible, but it's digital.
I 100% agree with that. And I think that's what they are. Right?
Exactly. But
they're actually collectibles that give you perks.
Yes.
For participating in this, in this brand's community that you are passionate about. And I think the biggest advantage to businesses getting on board, especially Web2 businesses, is that you create evangelistic fans, right? You create these people that want to go out and push your brand because they can profit from the upside.
Exactly.
You know, it just makes sense from all sides. It's very interesting. You mentioned that 99% of NFTs will fail. Yep. A lot of people say the same thing. Yep. I personally believe the same thing as well. You see NFT projects come and go every day.
Yep.
It's basically what you do, right? What common trait do you think will be inherent of those 1% that do succeed?
I think it's going to sound very, you're going to be like, oh, Nate, that's an easy answer. You haven't really said anything, but it's going to be the founders and the senior team. The reason why I'm saying the founders and the senior team is like, I know Proof have kind of sort of like Proof and then also Moonbirds have dropped off, but it's like Kevin Rose is the head of that. When you look at sort of some of these other projects, the guys with Doodles, it's not just a random Fiverr artist. It was Burnt Toast. Burnt Toast made the art for Doodles. The idea is you're going to need to have people that are well-respected in the space that are able to be sort of forward-thinking, that can actually get some stuff. Utes would not have done what it did if you didn't have someone like Frank that was so forefront when it came to D-Gods. So I think it's going to come down to sort of a charismatic founder that has some weight that can actually kind of push and pull, which will then kind of move things forward. And one thing that I always like to kind of bet on is when you look at, and I'll use the term influencer, but I hate the term, anyone that has any influence on these social media platforms, those are the brands and projects that I would sort of consider. Because when you have a founder that's always out front, always drawing in attention, then you're fine. In my inbox, like every day, I have a project going, hey, Nate, we're doing phase two of our roadmap. Do you want to do a video on it? Can you promote this? And it's just like, you guys are idiots. Why haven't you spent all this time and energy curating your own audience in a separate way that isn't just promoting your own shit to then be your mouthpiece? Like, I've spent my time and effort building up my brand and I haven't raised $1 million to do it. So why haven't you done that? Whereas the founders that are actually kind of out in the front, like Shan Gojira, like down in Melbourne, he's always on Twitter, always going hard, keeps popping up. You keep seeing those PFPs. He's a gun. And it's like, when you start to look at the projects that are going to succeed, you're like, why is he succeeding? Because he's always out the front. He's always doing stuff. He's always working hard, always jumping on calls, always doing things, always making connections. So you then go, do you want to go with the founder that's a recluse that doesn't make those connections, or do you go with someone that's doing that? And like, obviously you've got bigger sort of Web2 companies, but you're going, when you think about someone like Musk or something like Bezos, like when you think of Amazon, you think of Jeff Bezos. When you think of Tesla or SpaceX, you think of Elon Musk. They're not some shadow CEO that you don't know. These are personable figures that makes you go, yeah, this is great. Look, I'm not sure what the numbers were, but it's like what Conor McGregor goes, he's a personality. He goes, I'm going to create a whiskey. sell out the whiskey, it's worth heaps. You're going, in Web3, it's not any different. If you've got a founder that has a following that is able to command some attention, then they're able to draw new eyeballs in every time, which then means that the project has more chance to succeed, because in this current moment where it's really speculative, everyone wants to, if the price floor isn't rising or it starts to dip and they're like, oh, the founder isn't really doing much or they're not doing anything, cool, sell off. Things start to get a cascade of the price floor. But if the founder's always out moving and doing stuff, they're able to be charismatic. They are able to communicate to the holders, hey, look what we're doing. Look at the connections that we're making. Look how we're actually navigating the space, which then builds more trust, which then makes that seller go, maybe I'll hold on for another month and just see what happens. Maybe I'll hold on. And that's when, like, obviously you're going to get some pullback and some contraction, but not as much as like a 99% contraction.
Amazing point that you make. And I think that it's one of the fundamental things you look at when you're making any investment, right? It's who's at the helm of the ship, who's directing this, and do they know what they're doing? And I also think another point you touched on, which is you can't just market in Web3 like you did in Web2. You can't just go and piss money up the wall and hope to get some Facebook ads fucking getting you some return. It's not how it works. You need to build that community, and it's about that hand-to-hand combat as opposed to saying, hey, Nate, here's X amount of money. Can you do this for me? It's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I saw the clip when you were talking to Rowdy and how he was kind of describing that and explaining that. And it's so true. It's like we, like I was talking about on the start of the conversation, I'm in these groups, in these circles, you've got people that are sharing information. And it's just like, it's word of mouth to the extreme. And it's like, you can't, you can't try to fudge that word of mouth, because people know who people are. Like, there are all these little tips and tricks that you might not notice, but it's like, I'm in so many different servers. If a founder of a project like adds me on Discord, but we've got one mutual server, I'm like, you're not a real founder. A real founder or a real cloud manager is just like, you've got 30 or 40 sort of common servers. I'm like, oh, this guy fucks. Okay, cool. We're good. And then it's like you're able to do that, and everyone is on a shorthand. Everyone kind of knows who everyone is, and that's how it's easy to call out. Because same thing, you're in these groups, you're going, hey, do you like the founder of this person? Like, it's funny. Someone may say, hey, we've got a partnership with sort of Gojira. I could then hit up one of like sort of one of the guys in Gojira and just be like, hey, are you actually doing something with this? And like, no, I haven't heard of him. Cool, you're a fucking liar. Guess what? You're out, you're burnt. The idea that someone can be like, oh, we're doing something with Squishy Squad. I'll just DM Bento and be like, hey, this person said that they're doing this thing with you. Are you actually doing something with them? Then they'll be like, no, we're not. It's like, okay, you're a liar. It's like, they don't think we all know each other, but we all know each other. We can all DM each other, and we want to make sure that there's good sort of information circulating between. And it's that to a big extent, because it's not just me talking to other YouTubers, but it's other collab managers talking to collab managers. It's other sort of all Aussie guys speaking to all Aussie guys. It's all these like little pockets that are sharing stuff, which then means that you can then like exceed, or you can then, a project can succeed because you're able to get in there. And this is how, and I think you guys spoke to Jackson and Lewis, those guys with the project that they're doing, they're networking going hard. I know that like, even if it doesn't hit the hype that a US project would be, the Aussies are going to be like, I fuck with Jackson, I fuck with Lewis, I'm going to support that project. Like, that's just it. And it's like, because they've done that groundwork, they've done that legwork, and it's really kind of built up. And that's how you get that word of mouth sort of going. And that's exactly what Rowdy was saying, because it is that sort of that peer-to-peer real kind of networking aspect that you're not going to understand, because a Web2 CMO goes, how much do we need to spend on advertising? They don't go, well, who are the key ambassadors that we should get onto the project? And I think one of the new metas that we're going to have is you then get a whole bunch of advisors on board. You get some top tier advisors, because then people are going to trust. Because if I was going to advise on a project, people are like, I trust Nate. Now I'm going to properly take a look at this project. Oh, I trust Josh. I'm going to properly look at this project. And that's how you're really going to get that. So these Web2, if you've got a big check, write one up. If they want to actually kind of move in with the space, they can't be running how they want to run. They really got to like make sure that they are targeting these sort of key people within that, within the these ecosystems and these communities, which will then kind of, it just builds that little bit of trust.
That's awesome. That makes complete sense. So we're talking about founders.
Yep.
And sort of, you know, your big tip was know who the founders are and know what they're doing. Obviously in Web3 space, there's a whole culture around doxing or not being doxed.
Yes.
What are your thoughts when, so just for those that don't know, basically if you're not doxed, it means that you have not identified who you are as a person, right? So you can have a whole team out there and they've got these JPEGs as faces, you know, with pseudonyms, but you don't actually know who they are or what their history is. You can't cross-check anything like that. For me personally, especially coming from like Web2 heavy land, it's a bit of a red flag. Although I do understand the culture and I understand from a safety perspective and all these sorts of other reasons that everyone should have the ability to make their own decisions, and that's totally cool. What are your thoughts? How do you approach a project that doesn't have a doxed team?
I think it comes to reputation. So someone can be undoxed, but you trust them and they've got a good reputation. So the idea is that like NFT Pasta, he's a guy from Sydney, YouTuber, like I fuck with Pasta. It's like, it was a while back where I think I was talking to someone like, well, what's his real name? I'm like, I actually don't know. And it's one of those things where it's like right now, if I needed to give someone custody of 100 grand, no doubt in my mind, I'm like, Pasta, can I send you 100 grand? Can you just hold on to this and send it back? Like, yeah, fuck yeah, why not? I trust that dude. I trust that dude with 100 grand because he's got this reputation. I've conversed with him. He might not be doxxed in that sense in terms of like knowing his address, his name, date of birth, all that kind of stuff, but he's got that reputation, which is fine. So I think that a person can be in the space that has built these relationships, has put in the time and effort. They may not be doxxed in a traditional sense, but they've got this reputation that you just like, you trust. And that's the thing. It's like, I would trust these people, some of these people in the space, some of my friends that I may not know their name, may not know where they live or what, like anything like that, over some of like just someone that you meet on the street that goes, hey, here's my license, here's all this. I'm like, bro, I don't trust you. Because it comes back to you, like, I'm sure we've all met that friend called like sort of Jimmy or something. We don't know if his name's James or Jim or whatever. You've just known him from party after party. He's just in social circles. You trust Jimmy. You don't know where he lives, what his real name is, if he's even got a license or anything. But you just trust him because he's been there. He's become part of the furniture. And I think that's where, and this is where I feel like Web2 people may find it a little bit hard because they go, but you need to know their name to trust them. Like, but there's people that you trust without knowing their name and all those details because they've built up a reputation. Because for someone like Pasta, for someone like Crypto Gorilla, for someone like all these YouTubers, their reputation is more important than trying to rip someone off sort of even like $1 million, because they're in this for the long term and they know that they're going to make a mad bag if they just hold that reputation. And that's more important than kind of saying their name or doing that.
Mm. Well, I guess if people are in the space right now, they're not looking to make a quick dollar, are they?
Well, it's like, I think like it's funny because I think everyone's in it to make, and this like, it can be a controversial thing. Everyone's in it to make a quick dollar, but they're very particular with how they make the quick dollar. So what it is like, I wouldn't say that they're not in here to kind of make that quick money. They are in here to make that quick money, but they're very precise with how they do it, what they do and how they navigate it. Because one thing that, and it's like, I always get a lot of hate on it when I speak to some people, is that I think that the only people that are here are just to make some money. Like, I think there is only one utility people care about, price goes up. I don't care what utility you think that you have in your project. The only reason people say that they like that utility is so they can get that wireless, so they can kind of make that flip and make that money. And this is why you're getting projects that have just a giant exodus. Or every utility that people care about, they care about because they know that if they buy into this project now, that utility is going to be worth more to the future holder of this, which means they can sell it for more, which means that they can then be better off later on down the line. So the only utility people care about is price go up. And with that in mind, you then start to like, I think it's relieving because you then start to know what everyone's motives are and how the space is. And I think for Australians, it can be a little bit hard to understand that mentality and mindset, because we're in a culture where you really don't try to fuck over the guy next to you. You want to bring that guy up with you. Whereas I think other cultures are a little bit more get what you can get, fuck everyone else, which is a little bit hard. And it's very kind of, it's a very difficult mindset to kind of internalize, because you're going, but I can't do that. Hence why some of the content that I put out, it's a different content than some of the US content, because the US content is geared towards a particular agenda that they want to get across and what they want to do. Whereas for me, I want to do different things within the space. And that's why I think that if you kind of mix with like Australians from an Australian's perspective, we've got a similar outlook on how we treat other people and how we kind of want to work. I would rather take a loss on a project. Like, I mint in a project, no, I'm going to take a loss just because it's supporting my boy. that's what I'll do. Whereas I know these US guys, they will not do it. They'll flip on their grandmother just to make some dollars. Whereas for me, I'm going, what's that long term? I feel like the relationship that we have. If you're like, hey, Nate, I've got an NFT that I'm selling right now. It's 0.2 ETH. I'll buy it right now, not wanting to make money. I'll actively lose money on that just because I know that relationship that we build is worth more than something later, because this is, that's almost like the culture that we're in. It's just like, hey, that's what a mate does. A mate helps other people out. They support each other. Whereas I know that other cultures, they'd be like, they're either not going to mint it or they mint it and then try to flip it and be like, oh, I wasn't going to make any money off it. I'm like, but that's not the point. The point wasn't to make money. It was to build that relationship. They're like, yeah, but the money's more important. And it's like, I get it, but it just doesn't sit with me. I don't understand. I can't comprehend that.
That's really interesting, that comparison. I can't say I've had experience with it personally, but I can definitely see where you're coming from. And it does make sense to a degree. So you've got Australians that have a little bit more of a, let's call it a different investment sort of proposition, right? Do you think that that will affect, or do you think it is affecting the state of the Australian NFT market? And where do you see that going? I mean, we obviously started Oz NFT and we're very proud of what was going on here locally at the end of last year.
Yeah.
And so it's been really amazing to see the space grow, the connections that we've made, the beautiful people that we've, you know, both met in person, we've interviewed online, offline, that we've met in our Twitter spaces and everything like that. We are very Australian centric. And I'm really impressed with where the market's going. But admittedly, my eyes are not as heavily on what's going on overseas. And I know, obviously, having been to VCon and, like, you know, just keeping an eye on things, like, it's the US is obviously the dominant sort of country for NFTs. What do you think the state of Australian market is, the Australian market is, and where do you think it's going?
The way that I like to, an analogy I'd like to kind of think about with the NFT space with Australia, the US, that is almost like the music industry. It's almost like what it feels like here is if you are going to make some move, make some plays, do something big and crazy, it's almost beneficial to go over to the States and do something, because you're then going to be on their time zone. You then, it's like, it's easy, because if you're on the East Coast, you can mix with East Coast guys, do East Coast things and do that. Because, like, look, with the music industry, unless you're Jessica Malboy or sort of Guy Sebastian, are they really going to care? Kid Leroy, didn't anyone care about him? No, when he went over to the US and did some stuff with Juice WRLD, it's like, cool, he's popping off. Like, it, you almost need, like, if someone does have some talent, has some stuff here, I feel like it's not nurtured in a sense. And it's not saying that it's people that are in Web3 that are the issue. I think it's like, it comes down to sort of some government incentives, taxes, things like that. Like, you're going, if you're going to be running up a bag and trying to do something, I don't feel like this country is conducive of trying to run up like a $1 billion corporation, because I feel like you just tax crazy and taxed heavily. And with that in mind, you're like, okay, where are the opportunities? The opportunities seem like they're over in the US, when you've got some VC funding, when you've got these things, where you've just got access to a lot more things. But saying that, when I then kind of think about what we're doing right here now, I almost think about it like the Aussie swim team. The fact is, if we really kind of get together and we're like, it's starting to get a little bit more gelled together, everyone's getting more connected, then what's going to happen is eventually when we go bull again, it'd be like the Aussie swim team hitting the Olympics. We're going to wipe the floor with everyone because everyone's going to be together. I think it's hard because we are behind, like, technologically, if you think about crypto and that kind of stuff, I don't think people out here are as accepting of crypto and NFTs, but when they are, then it'll be like, okay, what can we invest in? What can we do? I also think it comes back to, like, and I'll blame myself here a little bit, it's also the content, because if you go into YouTube, if you're an 18 or 19 year old, and you want to make some quick money off crypto or NFTs, the thumbnails that you're going to see that you can click on is a person going, I made $50,000 doing this one thing. I can't make that kind of content because that isn't congruent with me. Like, I could have done a big flip, but it's like, it just doesn't feel right for me to do that. So the people that are getting that attention, that are willing to do that, are finding the US guys, which then kind of brings them into their ecosystem, which then makes go, oh, here's how it's properly run. And the people that are out here, like, does that kind of make sense when I'm kind of describing that? It's very hard. And I think it comes back to a cultural standpoint, because I'm not going to have, this project's going to 100X. I know you need to say that to get the clicks, but then I don't feel right going, not speaking about it. I can't go, this project 100X. I'm like, you know what? You'd be lucky to get 50% rise in it.
It was because you have ethics and because you care about your reputation, exactly. Right?
Which then comes back to why do I think things are popping off in the States? Because they're going as hard as they can. Mm. They don't give a fuck about the ethics or reputation. It's like, let's just go, which means that they're achieving some things.
Mm.
And I think it is a little bit more laid back out here, and people are a little bit more careful because they don't want to kind of essentially sort of extract liquidity and dump on their fellow countrymen. Mm. So that's where I kind of see the situation of the Australian NFT space.
Do you think it's because it's a bit of a smaller space, and so we're more cognizant and respectful of each other?
100%. I think so, because it's like, I'd say any Australian NFT that I'm going to buy into, I'm going to buy into it, not thinking I'm going to make money, just thinking like, okay, cool. It's most likely not going to pop off because the US guys aren't going to mess with it. And it's like, it's another thing as well. Like, looking at, I can make the same thumbnail, the same content, but as soon as the US person hears the accent, they go, oh, they're not American. Can we trust them? Are they like, it just doesn't make sense.
It's interesting that you mention that Australian made NFTs may not have the same traction that a US one would, because when you look at Australian made leather. So they were selling Australian Air at one point over to China. Mm. Australian made holds such a huge reputation overseas. But then you're saying when it comes to NFTs, potentially not necessarily the same?
I think so. And like, look, I'm going to get some hate. There's always going to be someone in the comments going, but what about this project that did this? What about this project that did this? And it's like, right now I can tell you, like, look at Gojira and what they're doing, how their ecosystem absolutely killed it. Guns. What about Psychedelics Anonymous?
I was talking to Sean last week and about Gojira. Yep. And he was saying, we never marketed ourselves as an Australian project. And he said that had a lot to do with the traction, he seemed to think.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% agree with that, because when you don't know where it's from, it can be from anywhere. And the US people just assume it's part of their own. And the idea is, you're speaking to a collab manager that could be from the US that's doing this, and you're speaking to someone from Europe, and it's like, it becomes a worldwide thing. And this is where it gets a little bit hard, because you've got for it to be a really good Australian project, it needs to not be an Australian project. And if it's not really an Australian project and you're 18 or 19, why don't you just go over to the US, go somewhere, live there, work closer to their timelines, their time zones, everything like that. Understand the culture, which then means same kind of thing going back to the music. If you are going to try to make something that is worldwide, why would you really want to brand it this country?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting point you make as well with time zones. I remember the first time we spoke, I think we lined up a call on the fly for 12:30.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
And it's because we were kind of both up doing our thing. And you're probably more involved in the US markets than I am, but you know, you're obviously up late. Making sure these things are happening, sitting on the Twitter spaces. And then that obviously leads to another topic which is quite hot at the moment, which is, you know, grinding culture and sort of mental health awareness and just making sure that everyone's okay through doing all this. And, you know, you talk to some people who it is really taking a serious portion of their lives. And understandably, it's an amazing opportunity. I know for Pete and myself that a huge chunk of our lives have dedicated solely into this space, and we wouldn't have it any other way. But we are very cognizant of, you know, sort of making sure that we do take our breaks and that we do go out and spend time however else we want to spend it, because I think it's really important. Do you have any other thoughts on sort of staying healthy, creating a healthy environment, a sustainable environment where, as you mentioned before, we don't see burnouts happening?
Yeah, I think it comes back to the self-awareness and not hating on yourself for not doing something. Like, it's that thing. If you're going to miss out on some mints over the weekend, just do it. It's fine. You're going to be all right. If you don't want to upload that video, you don't want to make those tweets, do it. You're fine. It's not the end of the world. Like, you're going to be all right. And I always take that approach. I'm kind of like, if I don't do anything, I'm not going to punish myself because I didn't do something, because I was doing something else. Totally fine. I'm happy with that. I'm cool with that. And I think that also comes with age and maturity, because an 18 or 19 or 20 year old feels like they need to prove something, they need to do something because they want to show for their, like, their high school friends or their uni friends that they actually are something. But look, we're in our 30s, like, don't give a shit. Like, the friend, you could have a friend from high school that could be earning $1 million a year somewhere. You walk up to him, you sort of give him a sack tap and be like, what up, dickhead? And it's like, this guy could be so respected in his field, in his organization. You can come up and disrespect him because, like, you don't care about what they're doing. You like, you've gotten to this stage where I'm like, it doesn't matter who they are. You like them for them. So when you kind of understand that you just like yourself for yourself, then you'll be fine. You're going to be okay, which then means that, hey, if you don't want to tune into that, don't tune into it. And people are like, hey, Nate, have you seen this project? You've seen this? I'm like, no, I haven't seen it. How have you not seen it? Because I've been sleeping, being out of the gym. I don't give a shit. Like, if I care about the pro, I'll find out about it. Like, that's fine. I don't care. I could go put completely off grid for a month, come back and be like, hey, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Oh, where have you been? What have you been doing? Fucking doing my own shit. Fine. I don't care. That's how I kind of see it and operate it. Because if you want to go into it and you want to go, if you want to sprint, you're going to be sprinting and going hard and just having a great time. That's honestly just how I see it. But I think it does come back to a little bit of age and maturity, because the guys that are making mad plays in this, the guys that I think have the longevity in the space are the ones that are a little bit more mature in how they're approaching it. They're not trying to do it to impress someone. They've got their goals, what they want to achieve, and that's good. Like, I got a friend in the space. He doesn't care about projects. He's like, I'm here to stack ETH. That's all he does, stack ETH. Zero, like, everything is so calculated. I'm going to mint this, sell. He just stack ETH. That's it. No other, doesn't have any attachment to anything. And it's like, that's fine, because I can come in and be like, oh, I'm holding this because of this reason. He goes, well, I'm holding this because of this reason. We're the same person. It's just like, it's fine. He wants to make some money off it. I want to hold on to this because I feel like it's got a long-term play. He'd rather take that short-term flip. But it's that point where we're able to kind of do that. And we're not going to sway each other's opinion and make the other person feel bad or feel good about what they're doing. It's like, I don't care what everyone else is doing in the space. I'm just going to care about myself, and then I'm going to be fine and happy with it.
I think that's amazing advice. And I think, yeah, especially to the 18 and 19 year olds that are listening, it's a little bit of a hard one, or it was for me anyway, to when someone said, don't care what others think, you know, because essentially that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think it's the best advice that you can give. And I mean, you know, to younger Josh out there who, you know, knew that but found it hard to take on, I find it does come with just age and time and practice and sort of being cognizant of what you're saying, which is like, be aware, think about what you like to do and what you need, and then do that, and be aware that others will not judge you as harshly as you judge yourself.
Yes.
Others won't judge you potentially like you judge others. And so then it's about sort of reverse engineering that and going, well, hey, I shouldn't be thinking about myself in that way, and I shouldn't be thinking about others in that way. I should be judging people based on their face value and who they are as a person.
Mm.
Not what they've done, not what they've achieved, but whether they live a happy life, whether they are, you know, sort of doing good for the planet, if that's something that's important to you. I think, it's a hard one, but I think it's really cool to see you just embodying that and just owning that and you know, being part of this space, which is so crazy and so intense, right? And just being able to separate yourself from it and not be fazed. I think it's admirable. I think you're setting a really good example for others in the space.
Well, the other thing is, if you are going to make content, don't read the comments. That's another thing. Like, I've spoken to some people like, how do you deal with the comments? I'm like, don't read them. Because my mate who's got like the 300K subs, he's like, don't read the comments. Mm. And it's like, because people are dumb. I'll put out a video that's like, five projects I'm minting this week. 2 weeks later, you can see the timestamp. You're an idiot. They've already minted. No, you're an idiot. Did you not see the date? Did you not see the timestamp? Like, people just, it's like, once you kind of realize people are just idiots, I'm like, it's fine. And if they've got, like, I wish I had 10 or 20 minutes out of my day to watch someone's content to then just like leave a comment. I'm like, man, if I had that time, that'd be great. That'd be sweet. I'd love that. Like, please, can I take over your life? Because I'd get so much more done.
And that's why you can never take it seriously, because you're never going to be able to relate to those people on their level.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that they're bad people or that they're not worthy or whatever. I'm just saying, like, as someone who's trying to put out consistent content, you can't relate to someone that's trolling through YouTube and just leaving comments. Exactly. It's just, you're on different fields, different scopes, and just let it be there.
That's
the easiest thing to look at it. Not that I'm there yet. I do still read the comments because it's fun to engage and see who's interested and sort of, you know, give back. But I could definitely see it getting to that point where, unfortunately, you just either, just can't
One thing that I actually would say, and I've said this to other people that have kind of wanted to get in to making content, is it's like, and it sounds very counterintuitive, it's very opposite of Gary Vee, what he would say, but I'm like, don't listen to your audience. And the reason I say don't listen to your audience is the people that are the most vocal, and it's not in a bad way, but it's like, they're like, hey, that's a really cool thing. Can you create a video, or can you talk about this topic, or have this person on again? The people that are the most vocal are the people that don't have, like, they're most likely not the people that you actually want to achieve. So what ends up happening is you're changing your content, you're adapting for that one person, when you in your mind go, you know what, here's the pivot, here's how I should actually move. And that's one thing, if I could go back to the start of my journey, I would pay less attention to the comments and the direction of those people, because sure, you've made one hardcore fan, but the rest of the people don't give a shit about that take or that aspect on it, when you thought that that person was like sort of the representative of the larger community, but that was just the loudest, most vocal person. So if you go on with what you intuitively believe and instinctually want to move ahead and make that content, you're then going to end up making better content. It's going to resonate with more people, because you ultimately are going to be in tune with the people. And the metrics and the data, like that one comment isn't the data. The data is the retention of it. It's the click-through rate. It's all of that. That can kind of tell you when you're onto something that's a winner.
It's really good advice. Full of gold mines right here, guys. You mentioned before the Australian swim team. It's kind of stuck with me through this. We've been thinking and actually talking to a couple of athletes about NFTs and the power of NFTs. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you have any maybe perspectives, or like, what would you do for an NFT project for the Australian swim squad, for example?
So if I, like, just thinking about the Australian, like, it's hard for the Australian swim squad, because I said that because I just know we would dominate at Olympics when it comes to swimming. But it's like, I like skateboarding is just something that I've done. I still do now. I try to do. I just like that. And I think an NFT for an athlete needs to come less into the sport, but more as in them as a person. So one thing that I'd kind of say is like, it's hard with the swim team, but it's like with the swim team, if you're going to sell out an NFT for, like, okay, I'll just use Ian Thorpe. He's the only swimmer off the top of my head. If Ian Thorpe at his like prime was going to release an NFT collection, what it would be is it would be kind of the things that you want to do, like meet and greets, swimming lessons, all those things that they're going to be doing anyway, that you can then monetize yourself. The NFT is like, instead of getting a deal with Speedo and then going to a Speedo event to then see those fans, where Speedo's taking the cut and then giving you a little bit, the NFT is taking out that middleman. It's giving you that access. So the idea, same with Gary, how he's got his different NFTs that give you different access. The idea that, hey, you're like, if you've got the Ian Thorpe NFT, there's going to be one of those NFTs, which is you're sitting in the VIP section next to his mum at his events. Like, those are the things that the athletes would do. But it also means that if you find an athlete early, you can then get in and you're essentially betting on them, because imagine if you got in and bought that Ian Thorpe NFT in the very...
when he was a kid.
Exactly. Now you're in that point where, like, okay, cool. Now you've got the VIP ticket to the Sydney Olympics 2000 front. Like, then you've got a good ticket. Then there's monetary value in it.
And I promise those fans will be cheering the loudest.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the way that I would kind of approach it, like, from a sports person, less more what they like to do sort of in their spare time and how they can incorporate their fans into it. And then obviously, like, the other aspect is, like, if you're the same, like a race car driver, like, I wouldn't be surprised if you can, at some point, you get a V8 Supercars team, like a team that is just an NFT, and you owning that NFT gives you that sticker here, that thing here. So then you've got all these brands, because then it essentially kind of, the NFT becomes the vehicle of investment. Mm. You've got like these things that can be traded in and out. Mm-hmm. Because when Red Bull sponsors that car, they need to pay for that car for that whole year. But imagine if you got something that you wanted to kind of swap in and swap out, like thinking about it in terms of that aspect. So the idea of a skateboarder or a motorbike rider or someone that's doing stuff on TikTok or whatever, why aren't you putting on the bottom of the deck that brand or that logo? Now you're able to interswap in and out and buy some NFTs and things like that. Like, that's the idea, that you could kind of sell an NFT, begin residuals off it and kind of that, because then it means that someone that thinks they have some talent could buy up a whole bunch and be like, cool, I know this person's going to pop off. And that's your investment, which then comes back to the speculative nature, because now you're going, I trust this person. I believe in this person. Here's what I'm going to do. Now, I know all the haters will then be like, yeah, but what happens if they don't honor the NFT later? It's only this, it's only that. And it's like, obviously, you're going to have people that want to renege on it, because if Ian Thorpe sold his NFT for $100 and that seat could be going for $10,000 now, but that NFT's been traded back and forth, it'd be very easy to be like, oh, that NFT's over and done with, let's do another set. So this is where I think it gets a little bit difficult when it's with a person, but that's why Gary's big on his reputation. So he's going to honor those NFTs for as long as he can and make sure he's like supporting his core people. You will have some bad actors in the space, like so not just like the athletes that could do something, then realize they can renege on it. But those that are very smart and powerful will be like, cool, put out a little bit of a Genesis set, raise some funds, which can then mean that you can take your thing to the next level, give value back to them, value that doesn't cost you any money, but just sort of time.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, no, it makes sense. I just think it makes so much sense, especially from an IP perspective as well. It's another whole huge kettle of worms that you can open up, can of worms that you can open up and talk about. So much that we could keep going into. I'm a little bit cognizant of time though. Yeah. Let's wrap it up. Yeah. But I think there's definitely a part two coming soon, especially for Pete to be here. It'd be great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
It was amazing. What's where can everyone find you and follow you?
So on Twitter, NFT Nate, but there's an underscore at the end. It's a terrible thing. On YouTube, NFT Nate, and then also TikTok NFT Nate. Like, I find that TikTok's got this mad vibe for NFT content, because everyone's on Twitter, but there's this kind of like culture in TikTok that I think is actually sort of popping off. And I feel that when we get crazy bullish again, that's going to be the platform that'll kind of really do quite well. Because you've spoken, like, I'm sure you've spoken to Cameron, like some of the TikTok guys, like they're guns. They're really good, putting out great content. And it's like, it's a really good way to engage. And that's the thing. It's like, you try to DM me on Twitter, I'm not going to see it. Mm. You comment on my TikTok, I'll see it. Mm. Like that's the chance right there.
Yeah, amazing. NFT for noobs, Josh.
Yeah, Josh.
Incredible.
Absolute gun.
Check him out. He's got some really good content. Mate, thank you so much for coming out.
Thanks.
And we'll have you on again soon.
Easy done.
Cheers. Thanks, man.